and a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out our podcast. It's called The Nick Craig Show. It's available wherever you get your shows. You can also listen online on the web on your computer by visiting the website nickcraig.com. We do start off with some breaking news across southeastern North Carolina this morning. Some sort of major police escalation and event happening, and a shelter in place being issued for individuals in the area of Whitner Drive here in southeastern North Carolina. On a map, this is just off of Holly Tree Road, off the intersection of Shipyard and College Road. There is apparently a suspect that has barricaded himself inside of a home, and with that, the Wilmington Police Department, who has responded to this scene, has responded to this situation, is warning individuals in and around Whitner Drive to shelter in place until we get some additional details from law enforcement. Right now, details very sketchy. We have really no idea exactly the situation. All we know is WPD says, quote, anyone living in the 4800 block of Whitner Drive is asked to stay indoors and shelter in place until further advised. This is for their own safety. Now, 4800 Whitner Drive puts you at this end of a cul-de-sac on Whitner Drive. This is Whitner and this is Holly Tree. Zooming out a little bit, you can see the intersection of Shipyard and South College Road. So that is unfolding right now. Not sure if we'll get any additional or new details before we're off the air around 8 o'clock this morning. If we do, however, we'll pass them along to you right here. Again, in and around Whitner Drive, south of Shipyard Boulevard and South College Road, somebody has barricaded themselves inside of a house. Police are asking those folks in and around that area to stay indoors and shelter in place. We'll keep a very close eye on that. We turn our attention to the General Assembly this morning, where we are discussing House Bill 636. This is a piece of legislation brought forth by Republicans who are in control in both the House and the Senate that would require the State Board of Education at the state level to set up a database of rejected library media and books, and directs every local school board to create a 10-person community library advisory committee that includes at least 5 parents. Why is something like this being discussed? Why is something like this coming up? Well, there's been a lot of concern over the last couple of years from individuals all across the United States. This is not uniquely a North Carolina issue at all. Many discussions and many concerns about material that is existing within public school libraries. And I want to emphasize the school element of this, right? We're not talking about public libraries as a whole. We're talking about public school libraries. And of course, yep, schools are broken up into different age ranges. Many schools are K-5, K-6. Then maybe you've got a middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And then, of course, into high school, then your rest of your grades, 9 through 12, whatever the makeup is, it changes a little bit. But that's generally the makeup. And so over the last couple of years, we have seen the concern of parents and legal guardians in places all across the U.S. that have continually brought forward concerns about lewd, inappropriate material that exists within public school libraries. This is not a new discussion. This is not a new conversation. And it's an unfortunate circumstance that has unfolded, where you've got individuals in the school system, whether it's the library or somebody else, that is purchasing and stocking inappropriate material, things that everybody would determine as inappropriate material within the public school system. Right? We know the ages of individuals within the public school. If you're at a K through 6 school, right? We know those age ranges. As old as what? 12 years old, something like that? 11, 12 years old in 6th grade? We know the age. We know how old you are. We know what is appropriate for individuals between 3 and 12 years old. There's not much room to dissect anything there. And for whatever reason, we have seen a huge amount of complaints and concerns coming forth from not only educators, but from parents that are saying, why is there this inappropriate material in my child's library? Why is my kid coming home with a book that is describing graphic sexual acts at 10 years old? Why is this even being made available? And I think it's a fair question. Now, you want to get into middle and high school, and you want to talk about, oh, well, we need to have these various books available and so on and so forth, that's a fine discussion. But when you're looking at our youngest individuals in the public school system, there are serious, real, and valid concerns being brought forward about why inappropriate material exists within the school system. Why this inappropriate material exists in a public school library. And again, school library, not a public library that's funded by a county. That's a completely different ballgame, but a public school library. So in response to this, the General Assembly doing what I would argue is their job, listening to constituents, listening to concerns from their voters across the state of North Carolina, have brought forward House Bill 636. As I just mentioned, it directs the State Board of Education to set up a database. It instructs local Board of Educations to create a 10-member community library advisory committee. At least five of those members are parents, individuals that are not directly in the school system. They're not employees, but they have kids within the school system. It's a bill that Republicans describe as a way to protect children from vulgar, inappropriate, and in some cases, pornographic content that exists within the school system. Seems like a pretty reasonable piece of legislation. This was up for debate once again yesterday in the North Carolina House of Representatives, hour-plus long debate, and it is very interesting to see and hear the Democrats' argument and point on this. And before we get into why Democrats, of course, object this legislation, because one thing we are certain of is that any time parents are asked to be involved within the school system, anytime there's any discussion of parental involvement, Democrats panic. This all started during COVID, when kids were sent home by Democrats like Roy Cooper, Democrat school boards like here in New Hanover County, board members like Judy Justice, who sent your kids home for a ridiculous extended period of time, sat them in front of a laptop and had them learn on Zoom. Well, for the first time, really, in modern history, parents were actually able to see what was going on in the classroom day in and day out. Now, of course, they talk to their kids. They hear about, oh, what'd you do today in school, Jimmy? What'd you do today in school, Sally? Right? All of that stuff, sure. But for the first time, parents were actually essentially in the classroom with their child from as young as first and second grade all the way to high school. Parents were essentially in the room with their child as they were working from home and watching their children while they're doing remote learning via Zoom, which of course didn't work. And since that period of time, the early parts of 2020, when this all began, parents, a lot of them started scratching their head and saying, what the hell's going on in my kid's classroom? Right? They're having a discussion about gender ideology in an English class? Right? We're not talking about a sex ed class. We're discussing pronouns in a geography class? Right. Why are some of these things happening? Parents started getting more involved in their child's education because they had some insight, and a lot of them said, this is absurd. This is ridiculous. This content is not appropriate. Many of them appalled by what they were hearing coming out of their public school classroom. Since then, we've seen the Parents' Bill of Rights make its way through the North Carolina General Assembly to the dismay of Democrats who do not want parents involved in the classroom. And now we're seeing House Bill 636 being discussed and brought forth again, or brought forth as well, another piece of legislation which increases parental insight, increases parental involvement within the public school system, something that Democrats are very much against. Want to remind you that you can text in this morning at 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. Let's head on over to one of the bill's primary sponsors, Representative Neil Jackson, a Republican out of Moore County. He brought forth the legislation. He explained to not only his colleagues, but really every citizen in North Carolina, why is this legislation coming forward and why does it even exist? Here's Representative Jackson.
Years ago, I got a phone call from one of our school board members, and her question was this. She said, Neil, do you know what pervasively vulgar is? And I said, well, I can try to make a stab with it. She said, we have parents bringing us books that are totally inappropriate, and we are trying to do something, and that is the definition that we have to determine if they're good or if they're bad. And she said, it is very sketchy, and I need you to do something about it. So we, 2 years ago, began just working on this process. And so we got some legislation drafted. She came back a year ago and said, how you doing on those two words? And I was like, well, we're working on it. We took it to our three school superintendents, and they made significant changes to it so that this was a local bill with parent involvement and school board involvement, and Raleigh's not trying to legislate from Raleigh.
Now, let me stop that right there. So here you've got a member of the General Assembly who is describing individuals within his local school system in Moore County, of which he represents District 78, saying, Representative Jackson, we've got a problem, a situation that is unfolding within our school system. We want you to do something about it. See, Democrats always make this up, and you'll hear it as the comments continue, that the Republicans are just manifesting this stuff, right? We trust librarians, we trust superintendents, so we trust teachers. Oh, this constant line from the left. Yet you've got a member of the General Assembly saying, I heard from people that I represent, and I even brought this to people I represent. He mentions his three superintendents in Moore County. Hey, here's the legislation we're working on. Take a crack at this. Give us some feedback. But this is how the process works, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you may disagree with the legislation itself. You may think the legislation is bad and stupid, which is what the Democrats will claim, and censoring and book banning. Right? That's their favorite word, book banning. But here you've got a duly elected member of the General Assembly that is taking feedback from their constituents, specifically constituents within the school system, and trying to craft legislation, right? The left that's always screaming about my democracy this, my democracy that. This is democracy, folks. You have elected members of the General Assembly that are getting feedback from people that they represent and working on legislation. This is democracy. Now, you guys don't agree with it, but this is what you're always yelling and screaming about. More from Representative Jackson.
I want to commend all of my co-sponsors because they have worked tirelessly on this. Here's what this is about for me. The most important gift I've ever been given in my life, after my wife. Not my house, and it's not my cars or anything else, is my children. And then I had grandchildren, and they might be a little bit higher than my children, but I wouldn't tell my children that. And since the beginning of our country, we have recognized the importance of protecting the innocence of children. And that's what this bill is all about, is let us protect the innocence of children. This is not a Republican bill. This is not a Democrat bill. You look at all of the polling, and the polling is high that parents do not want sexual activity. The polling shows 69% believe books containing pornography should not be in high schools. That number goes to 79% for middle school and 85% for elementary schools. You say, all right, Jackson, what does this bill do? Very simply, it requires LEAs and each public charter school to maintain a current list of the materials in the school library collection and post it on the school website. It creates a statewide criteria for media materials on the school property, including a requirement that materials be age and developmentally appropriate. It clarifies that the age and developmentally appropriate for any age and age group of children shall not include descriptions and visual depictions of sexual activity as defined by North Carolina law. And we went that pervasively vulgar, and then we went to sexual activity as described in 14190.13. And that's been there since 1985. We did not come up with that. That has been in statute. Now, that's a long statute. If you want to read the first part of it, it doesn't have anything to do with it. But if you'll read down, it clearly defines what sexual activity is. And then it establishes an advisory committee consisting of 10 members, 5 school employees, 5 parents. It requires that materials recommended for approval and books which are objected be voted on by the school board, and it requires the posting of any books rejected by the board be posted online.
Seems like a pretty relatively reasonable piece of legislation. This is a concern. This is something that was brought forward by members of Representative Neil Jackson's local school board, local school district, and he's working through legislation to essentially centralize the process for getting explicit, crude, sexual, and in some cases, pornographic material out of the classroom. That's what this bill describes. That's what this bill does and deals with. And for whatever reason, this is seen as the most unconscionable thing that is taking place. You'll hear from a couple of Democrats coming up on this legislation how absurd something like this is, how ridiculous something like this is. And the question really comes back to, why is this stuff in the classroom anyway? Why is this stuff in libraries anyway? What is the literary benefit of having some of these books in the school library? Well, again, we're talking about books that describe very explicit sexual acts. And this is in a public school library, K through 5 elementary school. Tell me, it justify to me where that makes any sense to have in front of somebody who's 9 or 10 years old. That they need to be reading through books that describe explicit sexual content. Discuss those kinds of very vulgar things that you would not put in front of a 9-year-old. Now, you're a 17 or 18-year-old in high school, you read whatever the hell you want. I mean, you're an adult. But at 9, 10, 11 years old, that's the kind of content that's being put in front of children? I don't think so. That doesn't really make... Express to me why that makes any sense at all. But, and I guess we'll hear that. Here's Representative Laura Budd, who is a Democrat in Mecklenburg County. She took a stab at this legislation. Take a listen to this.
I'm going to start with, not every book belongs in every classroom.
Oh, really?
Or library. But I have a deep faith in librarians and the art of library science and their training and education to determine what is developmentally appropriate in classrooms and libraries for children. They may not always get it right, but guess what? We already have a process for this. We have had a process for this. This bill today is not about protecting anybody or anything. It is a messaging bill, and it is the start down the slippery slope of censorship. Because when you control the flow of information, you control education. And when you do that, you begin to narrow down and curtail intellectual freedom, academic freedom, and ultimately, freedom of thought, which is the very foundation and principle that underpins the First Amendment. Yesterday in K-12, I did ask one of the bill sponsors, I actually asked all of them, I said, could you give me a list of the materials and the books that you have reviewed and are using as the nexus or genesis for this bill? And I'd like to thank Representative Balcom because she gave me that list. She made it a point to bring me the materials so that I could speak intelligently about them today.
I'll note, I tried finding this list. It doesn't appear that it was published online anywhere, so I don't have exactly the examples that were used, but apparently Representative Balcom did provide this list to members of the K-12 Education Committee in Raleigh.
And some of what I read was offensive to me. My viewpoint, my opinion, my freedom of thought, not yours. But that, again, is my viewpoint. And that's the literary value that I've assigned to the materials. It may be very different than my colleagues, my friends, and my family members, and the literary value they assign. That's the freedom of speech and freedom of thought. I am more progressive, I am well-read, and I view being well-read as being well-educated because you begin to go back to what Socrates said. How do you know what you know? You have to keep reading and keep learning. So in all likelihood, there are probably far fewer materials that are going to offend my moral sensibilities and my religious values. And my job as a parent, when I am intaking information, is to make those decisions as to what's appropriate for my children and my family. I set those boundaries as the engaged parent. That's a parent's role. And if I recall correctly, we spent a lot of time and energy last session on the Parents' Bill of Rights. And one of the focal points was the removal of government and politics from classrooms. So this bill speaks of the hypocrisy now associated with that. The government does not need to interfere in this arena.
So the government doesn't need to interfere in the arena, yet it is the government that is putting these books in the library, right? I mean, we're talking about public schools, aka the government. And she makes this claim, well, you guys are trying to get government out of the classroom. This is not bringing government to the classroom. This is bringing parents into the equation, which the Democrats hate. And the reason Democrats hate this is very clear. The public school system is the greatest indoctrination tool that the left has against children. They are able to use the public school system to indoctrinate individuals into their left-wing radical political ideology. That's what the public school system is for the left. They've been called on that since COVID. As soon as I mentioned earlier, when kids came home during COVID and were sitting in front of Zoom calls learning and doing school, parents started seeing the kind of liberal progressive nonsense that was existing in their kids' classrooms. They were outraged by that and decided to get more involved, called their members of the General Assembly, started showing up to school board meetings, and in the case of New Hanover County, got so pissed off about it that the Republicans swept the Board of Education in 2022, went 4-for-4 in winning school board seats. Melissa Mason, Josie Barnhart, Pat Bradford, and Pete Wildebor all won their elections in 2022, coming off of schools being shut down and parents being appalled as to what was going on in their kids' class, right? That's the scene. And so this idea that this legislation brings government into the classroom is absurd. And she makes the claim, oh, well, it's going to offend your religion, so it's being removed. That's not what this bill and how this bill reads at all. This is specifically dealing with reprehensible kinds of literature within the public school system. That's what this bill deals with. It is an issue-driven, a complaint-driven piece of legislation that gives parents, gives legal guardians, the opportunity to have more oversight as to what's going on in the classroom. And this idea that, oh, well, parents should have the final say. Agreed. But how the hell do parents have the final say when their kids are at school for 7 hours a day? If the kid is not bringing the book home and reading it with their parents, how is the parent supposed to have any involvement as to what's going on? Right? That doesn't make any sense. Yes, you, of course, as a parent, have a final say over what your kids are doing. But if you're not with them at public school all day, which you're not, if you're not standing beside them, watching over their shoulder the entire day, which you're not, your level of involvement is not anywhere near as high. You can try and be as involved as you want. But if you don't know what's going on in the classroom, you don't know what books are being checked out, what books are being read by your child, how are you supposed to be involved? That, to me, just doesn't make any sense. You want parental involvement. You should want parental involvement. But I guess for Democrats who, again, use the public school system as an indoctrination tool for their political agenda and their political ideology, they don't want that at all. So let's continue down this road. Here's Representative Marsha Mori, a Democrat out of Durham County, expressing her disdain for this legislation as well, and goes on this diatribe as to how every single book is going to have to be checked and it's physically impossible.
Thank you. And Representative Jackson, I know you're trying to protect children, and the title of the bill, Promote Wholesome Content for Students. We all want that. We all want that. There's no doubt. But the subtitle tells us exactly what this does. And I know there were some contentious comments in K-12 yesterday. It is a book ban. It is simply a book ban. Read the subtitle, an act that establishes procedures that content that is harmful to minors is not made available in schools.
How is that a book ban? How is that a book ban? What part of that is banning books? I'm confused.
Harmful to minors is not made available in schools. That is a ban on books. I think my colleagues have said it very well. I think Representative Quick and his amendment. There is so much that is impractical in this bill, unfortunately. But to have, you know, a superintendent select 10 people across this state, 2,600 libraries, 115 units of public education. An average library has 12,800 books. We're talking about, in this state, to be reviewed, 33,280,000 books. That's books, not media.
So she claims that, I guess, 30 million books or whatever number she's going to have to go through. But I always find this discussion rather interesting. So when you go into a public school library, right, they don't have every single book that was ever produced and published, right? That would be insane. It's not the Library of Congress we're talking about. We're talking about a public school library. And I remember in my time in the public education system, not every single book is available, right? Because there's a limited number of space in a school library, depending on the size of the school. And then, of course, you've got a financial element. Is you can't buy every single book that has ever existed and put it in every single school library in every single school across the entire country. That is impractical. So decisions are made by local librarians as to what books are available and what books are not. Right? It is a curated list of books that are available, not every single book. So how is that in itself not a quote-unquote book ban? You see what I'm saying? Like, if the argument is, well, these books that contain vulgar comments and sexually explicit content are being pulled out of the library, and that's a book ban. So if there's an individual book that's not available in your local library, is that book been banned? Because it's not available because of either a space constraint, a monetary constraint, or it's just not a book that anybody thinks makes sense to have in a library, so they don't decide to purchase that book. Right? Inherently, those libraries are curated lists of content. Inherently, those libraries do not have every single piece of literature ever written by man available. Therefore, there are books that are already quote-unquote banned if we use the same rationale that Representative Marsha Mori and other Democrats use. By definition, you've got hundreds of thousands of books that are banned in every single public school library, potentially millions of books. Because they're all not available. They're all not available for a 7-year-old to go and check out from the library. It's a very weak, very, very weak argument. We'll now get back to the other side of the political aisle. Representative Brian Achieva, who is a representative out of Cabarrus County, speaks on this as a parent. He gives his thoughts on this piece of legislation.
I'm grateful for this bill as a legislator and a father. And I'm thankful that there is an element in this state that wants to protect children, minors, from sexually explicit material. And as a parent, what I've watched over and over again is that this same debate has happened over the years, but it only occurs when more parental involvement is proposed. I believe that as we continue as a society. Parental involvement is what has either hurt or helped us most. Helped us when things are going well, hurt us when parents are not involved. Now, I, as a father, understand that this is not a book ban, and that we like to say that when it's not. The truth is, there will be a list of rejected library media that parents are welcome to go to the public library, not the school library, and check out for themselves, or to get on Amazon or go to the local bookstore to make the purchase on their own. This is not a book ban. This is putting things out of the reach of children. And I appeal to the parents in this state, the parents in this body. The truth is, when I was a kid, we would go to the local convenience store. And there were, at that time, is when the sexually explicit magazines would start. So they used to all be at eye level. Then all of a sudden, they were not at eye level anymore. Then all of a sudden, they had black plastic over them. So there was a time when we all agreed that sexually explicit material should be out of the line of sight and reach of children. And I get it, in theory, some of us in here think that the children should be able to access this material and then the parents at home should be able to clean it up. But I can tell you, once this material is read or seen, if it is sexually explicit, it may be too late as a parent to clean it up. And I urge everyone here, in spite of your public comment, I urge everyone to support this bill, and let's stop the biennial implosion that happens every time parental involvement is brought up. Thank you very much.
Well, he's 100% right. Every single time there's a discussion of parental involvement in the school system, Democrats lose their mind over it. They claim censorship. They claim infringing on First Amendment rights, banning books, banning this, banning that. They go to the same well every single time. Because I truly believe the reality is they don't want parents involved. Now, they can claim that they do. They can, you know, gaslight the citizens of North Carolina and claim they want parents involved in education. But every single time parents are asked to be involved, these people fly off the handle. Yell and scream about how these damn Republicans are banning books once again. These gosh darn Republicans and their book banning. They're censoring. Every single time. And we heard more from this, some of the hypocrisy from Representative John Blust out of a Republican out of Guilford County, calling the Democrats on their nonsense. Take a listen to this.
Not long ago on the calendar, we did a bill by Dr. Reeder, Toxic Free Medical Devices Act of 2025. Now, if I got up here and I started arguing that Dr. Reeder's bill banned all medical devices, you people would think I've gone nuts.
Probably.
And I'm looking at this bill that's purported to be a book ban, and I can't find a ban on books anywhere in this bill. It seems to me that if a book is pulled from the school library, any parent that thinks that book's important to their child's education could go out and purchase that book at Barnes and Noble. You could get on Amazon and purchase that book. In fact, one member over there claimed she was reading a banned book to her kids. And I thought, where'd she get the book if it's been banned? So that is some toxic language that's been thrown out there. And then the base hears this language and they get on email or they come into the gallery and they're all mad about something that isn't in the bill at all.
And to the point here that Representative Blust is making, that's exactly the case. Right, because the messaging, and I was on X yesterday afternoon watching this debate go back and forth as it was happening in the General Assembly, and what did I see over and over again? Book ban, book ban, book ban, book ban. Even some a post from the North Carolina Democrat Party calling it a book ban. Because these people are disingenuous actors. They're not interested in discussing the actual bill itself. They're not actually interested in discussing why they feel it's okay to have sexually explicit content within the school classroom, right? Because they don't want to defend that. So instead, they completely flip the argument on its head and claim that Republicans are trying to ban books from your public school library. And I'm glad he brings up, I believe it was Representative Budd from Mecklenburg County, who literally said, I'm currently reading through a bunch of banned books with my daughter. And he makes the point, well, how the hell are you doing that if they're banned? Right? When something is banned, it means it's not available, not accessible. You'd have to go to some underground marketplace to get access to these books if they were banned, right? You look back at Prohibition when alcohol was banned in the United States. What did you have? You had individuals in the mountains moonshining and making their own homemade alcohol because it was banned. They didn't have the ability to go over to a local store and buy it. But that's what you have with these books. If they're so important for your child and your family, go rent them from the public library, which I'm sure will have it available. Or if not, buy it. Buy it on Amazon. Buy it at Barnes & Noble. Buy it at Books A Million. There's a thousand places you can go and purchase these literary pieces of art if you're interested in reading them. But just because they're not available in one public school library does not mean that they are banned from the public. The connotation there is absurd.
And they don't believe you when you try to correct them. Now, someone over there also mentioned that it's a parent's responsibility, and I think everybody here agrees to that that's who should be in charge of what their child sees. First Amendment right. There's nobody that's violating anyone's First Amendment with this bill. Another thing I heard is we don't want edicts from Raleigh, and I give you, I think maybe, had I been on education committee, I might make this fully complaint driven so that nobody has to examine all the books. And I don't know how thoroughly anyone's got to examine all the books. I think it will mainly be because of subset 6 on top of page 3. I think it will mainly be a complaint driven process here. But edicts from Raleigh, I just note the same people who claim they don't want edicts from Raleigh are great with edicts from Washington, D.C. Let men in the women's room, or we're going to pull your funding. That was the official policy of the previous administration. So you sure are selective with
point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The left then will claim, oh, we want a smaller government because you're trying to ban books from libraries. Since when have Democrats ever wanted smaller government? Since when have Democrats ever wanted less government involvement in your life? Can't think of a single example. So it appears that this legislation, which by the way did pass 63-46, it now moves on to the North Carolina Senate. This legislation is as I understand it and read it, is a complaint-driven piece of legislation that will allow parents to go forward and request books being removed that they find to be sexually explicit or have vulgar content in them. And then this 10-person community library advisory committee that this bill instructs to set up will go through the process, research the book, debate over it, and vote as to what they want to do. Right? Your most local form of government. This is democracy, folks. What's the issue? You're always yelling and screaming, hooting and hollering about democracy. Here it is. Let's let a group of parents and a group of individuals within the school make the determining decision. No longer just a librarian who decides what books they purchase. And the great news about it, there's going to be a statewide database so that not every single school board has to go through the process on the same book every single time. Talk about some efficiencies there. It's just so ironic to listen to the left constantly talk about banning this and banning that and restricting this and my First Amendment this, First Amendment. You think that Democrats standing up about this so-called book ban give a damn about my or your First Amendment rights? They don't. I mean, they'll be the first one to advocate for us to be shut down. The first one to advocate for our speech to be censored because they disagree with it, because they find it harmful speech, right? They'll be the ones yelling and screaming and chanting for you to be banned off social media because you express an opinion that's contrary to theirs. They'll be the first ones in line for that. But when Republicans say, hey, we want to get porn out of your kids' classrooms and libraries, we don't want sexually explicit content in your kids' libraries, the left, oh, no. They're all in favor of that. They're all for having that kind of content available. But the reality is North Carolina voters continue to elect Republican majorities in the General Assembly. And the result is Republicans get to govern. Republicans get to hear from their constituents, get to hear from individuals within the school system, and draft legislation that helps them. So the bill passed 6346. House Bill 636 now makes its way to the North Carolina Senate, where I'm sure there will be some more interesting debate on it there. It will then likely pass the Senate, make its way to the governor's desk, where he will all in all likelihood veto the legislation. And then we'll see if the House can override the veto. Senate can. They've got the supermajority. We'll see if the House can do so. It's going to be an interesting process to follow. I'll have links to the legislation and everything in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can get access to those daily show notes and more. Support the show financially, $5, $10 a month. You can also set a custom amount. Encourage you, if you believe you're getting some value out of the program here each and every weekday morning, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. On the other side this morning, we've got some interesting details as it relates to a resident of El Salvador, an MS-13 gang member that a federal judge says he wants back in the United States. Some details on that, plus Senator Chris Von Hollen making a complete jackass of himself in El Salvador yesterday. I'll have that clip coming up for you, as well as the Nick Craig Show continues, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this Thursday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. We do have an update on a story we covered earlier this morning, some sort of WPD situation going on in Wilmington, the 4800 block of Whitner Drive near Holly Tree Road, not far from the intersection of Shipyard and College, where law enforcement was on the scene and reported that a suspect had barricaded himself inside the home. Just minutes ago, posted on the WPD Facebook page, they say this, quote, "Shortly before 3 a.m., WPD officers were dispatched to the 4800 block of Whitner Drive for a shots fired call. Upon their arrival, they met with a citizen who pointed out a nearby residence where a male subject had fired a rifle. Officers immediately evaluated the area, and negotiations started shortly after the officers first arrived. Negotiations continued until approximately 6 a.m. this morning. Throughout the course of the morning, the suspect also fired at officers from his home. The suspect eventually exited the residence with the rifle and initially appeared like he may comply. However, that quickly changed, and when he was not complying with orders, less lethal means were used in an attempt to persuade him to comply. The subject continued not to comply. He once again retrieved his rifle, threatening officers, which resulted in officers returning fire, and the male suspect was hit." So it exchanged fire with law enforcement. EMS immediately began attempting life-saving measures, and he was transported to Novant Health, where he is currently in critical condition at this time. The shelter-in-place order that we talked about earlier this morning has been lifted, and the State Bureau of Investigation has been called to investigate. That is a standard procedure. Anytime you've got an officer-involved shooting, the State Bureau of Investigation comes in and investigates. So not exactly sure what is going on right now. Apparently, there's going to be some sort of press release at Holly Tree Elementary School with a public information officer from the Wilmington Police Department. Again, this is a new situation, something that is just kind of breaking and coming out over the last little bit, continuing to track some details on that. and just kind of waiting to see if there's a press conference that's taking place right now. Not immediately clear if that's happening now or if that's going to be happening at a later time. But that's what we're tracking right now, keeping an eye on those details, and we'll pass anything additional along. Somebody was shot by law enforcement last night after apparently not complying with law enforcement as it related to some sort of shooting taking place. We'll continue to track the details. All right, turning our attention over to some international/national news this morning. A federal judge yesterday said that he has found probable cause to hold the Trump administration in contempt for failing to return two planes deporting migrants to El Salvador last month. This is a major update that comes as tension between Trump administration and Judge Boasberg have continued to rise. In a 48-page order yesterday, U.S. District Judge James Boasberg said that the court had determined that the Trump administration had demonstrated a, quote, willful disregard for his March 15th emergency order, which temporarily halted all deportation flights to El Salvador under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which was a wartime immigration law to allow the courts to better consider the merits of the case. Boasberg had also ordered all planes bound for El Salvador to immediately return to U.S. soil, which did not happen. Hundreds of migrants arrived in El Salvador later that evening, where individuals were detained in sprawling maximum security prisons in El Salvador. Boasberg wrote yesterday, quote, "The court ultimately determines that the government's actions on that day demonstrate a willful disregard for its order, sufficient of the court to conclude that probable cause exists to find the government in criminal contempt." Boasberg instructed the government to file additional declarations by April the 23rd, demonstrating why the court should purge any contempt proceedings against it. Should they fail to do so, he said the court will refer the matter for potential prosecution. So he's going to prosecute the federal government, I guess, the Trump administration. Not sure exactly who he's going to go after, but that's what he wants to do. It's pretty amazing to watch this whole thing unfold. You have a citizen of El Salvador, who was in the country illegally, deported, a member of the MS-13 gang, deported out of the country. And you've got a district judge in James Boasberg, who believes he single-handedly has the authority to direct the movement of non-U.S. citizens into the United States. I played the clip for you earlier this week of the president of El Salvador saying, "What do you want me to do? The guy's not a citizen of the United States. Do you want me to illegally smuggle him into the country? Wait, this guy's not in the United States. This guy's not a U.S. citizen." The Supreme Court ruled unanimously that district court judges like James Boasberg do not have the authority to direct immigration policy. And the whole idea is just absurd. Under what authority could a judge direct the transferring of a non-U.S. citizen into the United States? Now, if there is a legal proceeding and we're talking about extradition, well, that's a different story, right? That happens from time to time. You've got an FBI investigation, some sort of international investigation that's taking place, and somebody is being charged and tried in U.S. court. That's a different story. But we're not talking about extradition. We're not talking about this individual being brought to U.S. soil to be prosecuted by the federal government. We're talking about an illegal immigrant, an MS-13 gang member who is a legal resident and legal citizen of El Salvador, with a judge saying, "Bring this guy back to the United States." Under what authority? Who cares? Under what jurisdiction and justification? Who cares? That's what this judge is saying. That's what James Boasberg is doing. And so with this, the administration continues to say, I don't know what the hell you guys want us to do. The Trump administration responded by saying this. Stephen Chung, the White House communications director, said, quote, "We plan to seek an immediate appellate relief. The president is 100% committed to ensuring that terrorists and criminal illegal migrants are no longer a threat to Americans and their communities across the country. That's what you've continued to hear from the administration, and rightfully so, right? Because you've got a situation unfolding where judges are trying to, I guess, bring themselves into immigration decisions that are solely in the executive branch, solely the responsibility of the president of the United States. The whole situation is just insane. So with that political theater taking place, Democrat U.S. Senator Chris Van Hollen, who is a Democrat member of the U.S. Senate, decided he was going to fly to El Salvador yesterday. So he went to El Salvador in an attempt to get justice for this MS-13 gang member who was in the United States illegally, right? Very important stuff for members of our U.S. Senate. So here's some audio of the great senator yesterday as he was trying to have, I guess, a meeting with the president from El Salvador and was shut down on that. Here's the senator.
Well, I'm asking President Bukele to... Okay. I'm asking President Bukele, under his authority as president of El Salvador, to do the right thing and allow Mr. Abrego Garcia to walk out of a prison, a man who's charged with no crime, convicted of no crime, and who was illegally abducted from the United States.
Illegally abducted from the United States. How can a non-U.S. I'm just thinking through this logically. How can a non-U.S. citizen be illegally abducted from a country of which they are not legally there? Right, that doesn't make any sense. So if I broke into your house and decided that I was going to stay there, right, and I was not leaving your house, you call police, they come and haul my ass out as they should because it's not my property. That would be the equivalent of me saying I'm being illegally abducted from your house. Now, I have no jurisdiction to be in your house, unless, of course, you've invited me to. But if I illegally enter your house and stay there, and you get me forcibly removed by law enforcement, as you should, and as you legally can, I'll know. How can I claim that I'm illegally being abducted from your property? I have no jurisdiction to be there. I have absolutely no legal ground or legal standing to be inside of your property. Yet, as you just heard from the great U.S. Senator, Chris Van Hollen, he is just trying to get the president of El Salvador, who, as we've already heard, has said, to hell with this. Right? He laughed at the Oval Office when Caitlin Collins was asking him about, oh, what are you going to do? And he goes, what do you want me to do? This guy's not a U.S. citizen. Where do you want me to ship him? You want me to smuggle him into the country illegally? That's not how immigration works. Here's more from Senator Chris Van Hollen, as he talks about how he tried to get a meeting with this guy, called the vice president and J.D. Vance, trying to set up all this stuff, just doing great work down in El Salvador to try and bring back an MS-13 gang member to the United States.
I also told his wife and family that I would try to meet with Mr. Abrego Garcia while I was here. So I asked the vice president if I could meet with Mr. Abrego Garcia. And he said, well, you need to make earlier provisions to go visit CECOT. I said, I'm not interested at this moment in taking a tour of CECOT. I just want to meet with Mr. Abrego Garcia. He said he was not able to make that happen.
Oh, darn.
He said he needed a little more time. I asked him if I came back next week, whether I'd be able to see Mr. Abrego Garcia. He said he couldn't promise that either. So I asked him if I could get on the phone, either a video phone or just a phone, and talk to Mr. Abrego Garcia so I could just ask him how he's doing so I could report back to his family. He said he could not arrange that. He said maybe if the American embassy were to ask, maybe that could happen. So I will certainly ask the American embassy to ask the government of El Salvador to connect us by phone. I asked him, how about his family? How can he talk to his wife so that she can hear his voice? I let him know that the family has requested that. He said he was not sure whether he could make that happen. So we have an unjust situation here.
Oh, yes.
The Trump administration is lying about Abrego Garcia.
Okay, great. By the way, the video kind of looked weird there. They keep moving the microphone back and forth. As he was speaking, somebody was translating it behind him. So that's why you saw the microphones keep flinging back and forth. You didn't miss any of his exchange there. Man, if the Democrats only cared this much about preventing illegal immigration, we probably wouldn't be in the situation we are right now, would we? I mean, if Democrats cared this much about stopping people coming into the United States illegally, if they care this much about upholding immigration laws and protecting our borders, Kamala Harris probably be in the Oval Office. Joe Biden might be in the Oval Office right now. But because Democrats spent 4 years ignoring our immigration laws, because Democrats spent 4 years waving the green flag for people to come into the United States illegally under most of the time false pretenses by just claiming political persecution, just claiming asylum with no justification, no grounds, nothing like that. That's why you saw the influx of illegal migration into this country with a weak administration, a weak president, and a weak Congress that didn't bother to do anything about it. And so now you've got individuals like Senator Chris Van Hollen, who is a senator out of Maryland, who is spending his time in El Salvador advocating to bring back an MS-13 gang member who is illegally in the United States. And he claims, oh, this person, he didn't break any laws, he didn't do anything wrong. He's illegally in the country. He broke our immigration laws to come into the United States of America. And when you've got the president of El Salvador, which we heard earlier this week in an Oval Office meeting with the president, that laughs at the notion that he is going to return a citizen of El Salvador illegally to the United States, calling it preposterous, as it is, calls it preposterous. These guys just won't stop. And of course, the media is gushing over this. I mean, I saw the headlines yesterday and the back and forth exchange about how the Maryland senator trying to help an individual mistakenly deported by the United States, man wrongfully deported to El Salvador. These people are off their freaking rocker. What an insane thing to be advocating for. Now, as it relates to the district court judge and attempting to hold the administration in contempt of court, I have no idea how any of this is going to play out. I really don't. We've talked a lot over the last couple of months about these uncontrolled judicial branches. This will end with SCOTUS once again. This will make its way to the Supreme Court and will be a win for the executive branch. And at the end of the day, with all of this, the same argument still exists. The Supreme Court needs to step in and define what the authority is of the district court system. It is fair to say now, and we'll likely see over the next couple of weeks, a district court judge attempting to hold a president and an administration in contempt of court for following through on immigration law solely vested in the executive branch. That these district court judges, and I would argue the district court system as a whole, needs to be reined in. John Roberts has the opportunity to do this. I don't think he will. It's obvious from his comments back a couple of weeks ago that he's not going to. Then this is just going to continue to happen. And what did I mention was going to happen with all of this? I mentioned this like a month and a half ago. That you're going to get to a point, and you're there right now, where the administration says, well, to hell with you then. That's the situation that the left has created by using their authority within the court system to usurp the president of the United States, to usurp his authority as it deals with immigration, which is solely vested in the executive branch And of course, Congress can change immigration law. But in terms of rolling out immigration, that is solely vested in the executive branch. You've got a judge that has decided he is going to overstep that authority and try and dictate to the president of the United States how he needs to follow through on laws that were passed by Congress, the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, right? That is the law that is on the books. Now, you can disagree with the law. You could think, well, that was passed at a different time. It doesn't matter. The law is, in fact, on the books. So whether you agree with it or not, it is law passed by Congress that gives the president the authority to deport people from the country. That's the law. Again, you can think it's stupid or you don't like it, but that's still the law. And yet you've got a judge that is attempting to step in and say, no, President of the United States, you don't have the authority to use laws enacted by Congress as they are written. Do you not see the problem there? And Democrats are gallivanting around the world now, going down to El Salvador, trying to fight for the release of an MS-13 gang member and get him illegally transported back to the United States of America. This is a huge losing political issue for the left, just like all of their disastrous immigration policies that we saw over the last couple of years. I mean, none of that stuff worked. None of that was fruitful for the Democrats electorally. They got their cans kicked to the curb in November of last year. Immigration was one of those large issues. Really, you had immigration and economy were the two big issues. Democrats botched both of those. Trump won 7 of 7 swing states, won the popular vote. Republicans continued their majority in the House and flipped the Senate. So maybe it's time to go back to the drawing board and reconvene on what our immigration policy is going to look like from the left. Going to El Salvador and pleading with the El Salvadorian president, who has already laughed this whole idea out of the equation, and trying to convince him to release a criminal into his country and then deport that individual out of his home country to the United States of America, where he's not a citizen, is absurd. But then again, we're talking about Democrats, so I guess anything is a fair game there for the left. Absolutely remarkable. Well, that's going to do it for a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Don't forget, you can financially support the show if you believe you're getting some value over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We're back with you tomorrow morning live right here on the Nick Craig Show.